Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. The season is over, and thanks, sweet baby Jesus Christ, for that. Don't know about you guys, but I'm glad it is done. And it, for a period there, it felt like this thing was never going to end, but it finally did. And now it's time to go back over the entire season and digest it all. And Jason Pat is on the other line. He's here to help me digest this weird, weird old season. So, Jason, what the hell do we make of this season, man?
And I'm honestly not too sure. You talked about how, like, just happy that it's over. I feel the same way. The second half of the season, I just was not into it at all. To be honest, I did not watch that many games very closely. I followed along, Bulls fan that I am, curious to see what they were doing, kind of got into the tank race. But in terms of, like, sitting down and watching every game, I just really couldn't do it. I was watching other games. Because, I mean, there was just really little point towards the end of the season when they were talking about whatever the player development and all that, yada, yada, yada. But it was most of the second half of the year was bums, blowouts, and the occasional, like, Sean Kilpatrick explosion, I guess, at the end of the year. But I guess overall, if we're looking at the entirety of the season, they won 27 games, which is, I think it was, from what I remember at the beginning of the year, I was thinking about 24, 25 wins. I actually made a bet with a friend, and we set the over-under at 26.5, so I won that bet by whatever, the exact win that I needed. So they were obviously a little better than expected, which might, if you were a big fan of the tank, maybe not the best thing you were hoping for there. Obviously, one of the reasons why they were a little better expected, there were a few good reasons there. Lauri Markkanen, their draft pick, was terrific. He's got a bright future. We'll talk a lot more about him later. Chris Dunn was a little better than expected, still not that great. And then Nico obviously had his big run, and he ended up getting the Bulls a first-round draft pick. So even though, while the tank was kind of ruined by Nico, he also did get the Bulls a first-round draft pick, even though the pick might not be that good because the Pelicans went on a huge run at the end of the year. Thanks to beardless Nico, who went crazy. It was putting up, like, boogie numbers by the end of the season without his damn beard. But overall, like, it was a frustrating year. It was tough to watch a lot of games. There are some positives. There are some negatives. It'll be interesting. I'm definitely glad it's over. I'm looking forward to the offseason, looking forward to the draft happening. So, what were your big takeaways of the year?
Well, in sort of getting prepared for this podcast, I was sort of just thinking about all the major storylines of this season. And I don't know about you, but personally, I sort of forgot about the whole Portis Miritic incident that, I guess, kicked off this season, or punched off this season, if you want to put it that way. But I'd totally forgotten about it because, like you sort of alluded to there, towards the back end of the year, it was tough to watch this team. And, you know, you said you weren't watching a ton, and I'm pretty annoyed at myself that I didn't discover or realize the ability to watch, like, sort of split screen on League Pass where I could keep an eye on the Bulls whilst watching other games. I only figured that out in the last week of the season, so that was kind of annoying on my behalf. But, like, there was so much that I'd forgotten because I just sort of got into the malaise of this terrible ending towards the season. But let's go right back to the start with this whole Portis and Miritic incidents. And let's just talk about that. And still, I can't get over how ridiculous that incident was. And not just the incident in itself, but the fact that the team was able to still gel from that moment and, quote unquote, build a culture despite that happening. I mean, that's how this season started. And I think we almost forget about that. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, it was goofy as hell. And I mean, I guess you do have to give Fred some credit. John Paxson did mention it today in his end of season broadcast, how they talked about the team building that quote-unquote culture during last summer. And, I mean, they did seem to get over it pretty well. I mean, the situation, like you mentioned, was weird as hell, because there was the whole, they weren't really talking to each other. But then when Nico came back, he was great. Him and Portis were like a dynamic duo together. The Bulls went on their big run, and they just kind of got over it. It was definitely, I mean, it was the first, it was kind of almost like ominous for the rest of the season that the weird crap starts the year like that, and then the rest of the year was just kind of followed suit with weirdness. So I guess, like you said, give the coaching staff some credit, and I guess the team some credit for getting past it and playing well after that 3-20 start once Nico did come back, and him and Portis doing really well together on the court. But yeah, I mean, it was just so Bulls. Like, you're getting ready for this whatever season. We knew it was going to be bad. We knew there were going to be a lot of losses, and then you get goofy stuff with punching and breaking faces. I mean, that's just unreal, really.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And the other thing I sort of reflected on was, I guess, the different iterations or different identities of this team over the season. So, you sort of alluded to it there, but at the start of the season, I think they were 3-20 at one point before Mirotić came back. And that was obviously one aspect of the team or one identity of the team. And things were looking terribly bad. They were pretty much the worst team in the league. But then Mirotić comes back, as you sort of alluded to. Him and Portis become this dynamic duo. Dunn comes back at that point as well. And the team starts winning an obscene amount of games, considering they were meant to be tanking. I'm pretty sure they were 14-11 during Mirotić's 25 games here as a Bull. So they were pretty much a playoff team whilst he was here. But then they moved away from that team, I guess. They traded Nico, and then I guess LaVine came into the fold, and then it became about developing Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen and that core three moving forward, and that became the next phase of the season. So, and then I guess once that concluded and the tank needed to be addressed, then all of a sudden Dunn and LaVine disappeared. Markkanen played here and there, and all of a sudden it became about the draft pick and playing bums and just making the last 25 games pretty hard to watch. So it almost depends on what phase or what aspect of the season you want to talk about to really, I guess, judge or grade this season, because it was almost like a four-part movie, I guess, because there was just different elements to this entire season, all season long.
Yeah, and that's why it's just kind of tough to judge when we're like talking about moving forward and like what we're going to expect from the team next year, because like, Nico was such a big part of why they did have that stretch. Obviously, like, Lowry was great. Dunn had those flashes. LaVine was, I guess, okay. He had a few. Obviously, he basically won the Minnesota game almost by himself. Besides that, it was not so good. But so it's, and when those three did play together, it was horrible. They had something like a -21 net rating. Obviously, the sample size is small, but they did not play well together, especially when the games where they played again, besides basically the Timberwolves game where they played quality competition, they just were not good together. They won some games together, but they won a lot of those games against tanking teams in the second half of the year, because like basically that second half of the year, the Bulls would play a good team and they'd just get their ass beat, and then they'd play whatever, the Mavericks or the Hawks or the Grizzlies, and they'd win those games. So it was just kind of like, you really, it's almost kind of hard to figure out just like how good these guys really are, like how optimistic should we be about their future, because they still, if they're going to be like, obviously they're going to talk a big game. I saw some headline today with LaVine talking about how they think they're going to make the playoffs next year, but like, they have to replace Nico's production. Like, LaVine and Dunn have to be a lot more consistent. Those three guys have to get better playing together because they were not good. They have to get a lot better defensively. There's still a lot these guys still have to prove. It was obviously when they went through that stretch and they were hot, and some people thought, oh, maybe this team's actually could be really good really quickly. And some people might think that, oh, they could make the playoffs next year. But there's still so much that has to go right for them the next few years. And even this year, they were, something I said to somebody else the other day was that they were almost unlucky to be as lucky as they were, because obviously we wanted a lot of losses, but they were also lucky in a lot of close games. Because I think, look, I liked looking at the clutch stats a lot during the season, and them and the Kings both played a ton of close games, and they both won like over half of their close games that they won. Just like, I don't know if that's a good thing that they got kind of lucky in those close games, because a bad young team shouldn't win that many close games, but they did. So is that good for the future? Is that a good sign? Or is it just, since Nico was there for a bunch of times, that mean they're going to have a huge, that luck's going to flip on them next year, and they're just going to end up being really bad again? Like, I honestly have no idea. And obviously, winning all those close games cost them possibly a top three draft pick. So it's like, it is just such a weird like dynamic. What happened with this whole season, with all those close wins, and with, like you said, all these different iterations of the team? It's like, it's just almost hard to judge what exactly happened.
Yeah, definitely. And what makes this season hard to judge as well, and I sort of mentioned this on the last podcast I did a few weeks ago, but over the last maybe month of the season, when this team effectively gave up and was actively trying to lose, it's kind of hard to judge how good certain players were, because if most of the teams that they were playing, or not maybe not most, but some of the teams they were playing against, were running absolute junk lineups to the point where it makes it really hard to evaluate these sorts of players. So like Bobby Portis obviously had a strong season. It was good throughout the entire season. But I mean, how do I weight that going forward, given that, you know, there was 8, 9, 10 teams tanking towards the end of the year? Same thing with Denzel Valentine and, you know, Antonio Blakeney and these sorts of guys, even Sean Kilpatrick. Like, is that someone who we can expect to be a nice bench piece next season? Or was he just ripping on bums at the end of the season because most teams were tanking? So it's kind of hard to evaluate the Bulls generally over the course of the season for a lot of these factors. The Mirotić factor earlier in the season we spoke about Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen, and the fact that they really couldn't have a cohesive trio together with those guys, which is probably the biggest disappointment thus far on this season, and it's definitely, I guess, the biggest open question heading into next season. And I guess what makes that difficult is the fact that Levine's contract sort of needs to be determined. So I guess my question to you is how much we should weight the, you mentioned it before, the 21.5 net rating, or the negative 21.5 net rating that trio has. How much should we weight that going forward next season?
Yeah, that was certainly a disappointment. I did not think that they'd be that bad together. Like I also mentioned, like small sample size, and Levine coming off an ACL. Like I think Levine will, I think the Bulls are bringing back Levine at basically any price point. Like it's going to be really interesting to see what that price point is. I hope it's not that much. There won't be that many teams with cap space. I would hope maybe 15 to 17 million. I know some people have said they think, oh, he's definitely getting 20 plus million. Maybe someone will max him. I don't know why anybody would do that, but all it takes is one team. The market is tight. Paxton talked about today how they're going to kind of let the market, whatever, play out, and that they'll let Levine explore his opportunities. So hopefully they can get him at a reasonable price. I basically think they're going to keep him no matter what. You don't trade Jimmy Butler and then basically the centerpiece that you hyped up to get back and then to let him walk after one season, especially after an ACL. He's gonna have to be a lot better. Paxton said that today. Like he said point blank, Zach Levine needs to be a better basketball player. They like him, they value him, but he's got to be a lot better. And obviously we saw that this year. It's not fair to completely judge a guy coming off that injury. Any player comes back from that injury, it's going to take time. But so there was still some troubling stuff that what we had seen from him before. His defense is absolutely horrible. And if you look at his on-court net rating, just in general, the defense was a complete shit show with him on the court. His offense, he can sometimes get being in the habit of a chucker. You worry about this was also talked about, Paxton, the pecking order, the dynamic with those three, like, will it be a Chris Dunn, Zach Levine, your turn, my turn type of thing at guard? Will that kind of freeze Laurie out when you want him to maybe be getting most of the shots out of those guys? It will be interesting to see how they figure that out and how they make sure that those guards can keep getting Laurie the ball in the spots that they want him to get. Because, I mean, that, for right now, those three are your three. Obviously, they're going to add to the team with another draft pick or two this year, and then hopefully another decent draft pick next year if they don't take a big step forward and they end up in the lottery again. It's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic does play out. And I think that's something that'll be the biggest thing to watch for next year. I'm not going to say I'm completely, like, I'm not going to say that they're screwed, like, because they played so bad this year. I'm honestly going to give them a lot more time. They deserve a lot more time together. They're still, Lowry's, what, 2021. Levine is still, what, 2022, 23. Dunn is a little bit on the older side. So I'm a little more skeptical of him, even though he showed some nice things. But that's definitely going to be probably the biggest thing to watch for next year.
Yeah, definitely. So Dunn will turn 25, I think, next March. So that's, yeah. I mean, we all knew he was an older rookie coming in, and it hasn't really been too much of a talking point. I know once he was traded to the Bulls, I know those who were negative about the trade brought up that point. But throughout the season, I think, you know, we were even, was it Stacey King sort of pretty much mentioning that this is effectively Dunn's rookie year. So everyone still treats him as a 19, 20-year-old guy, but he's much older. So the progression of Dunn is going to be definitely a big talking point next season in his third year. But I think that's probably the most disappointing thing for Levine to me was the fact that he came out gunning so hard. And I guess that's because of his contract situation. And again, it makes, you know, that variable makes it hard to judge how this three-man unit really will prosper together, if at all, going forward. You know, obviously he was coming back from the ACL, which was a big issue. But the fact that he was out there trying to earn some cash as well, and just coming in and gunning pretty hard straight from the get-go. And it seemed like the Bulls allowed him to do that. So it's not necessarily just on Levine, but it would have been interesting to see how that three-man unit would have gone if, okay, Levine still looks rusty, but maybe if he settled into that second or third option until he really got himself going, be it this season or next season. So that was probably the most disappointing thing from Levine, I guess, from my perspective. But it's kind of funny with Levine. Like, it seems like half the fan base is totally in on this guy. They still have faith that he can be a really good player. Whilst, you know, a lot of there's a big, large faction of fans as well that are kind of out on Levine, to the point where they'd be happy to see him walk, basically maybe not for any amount, but for an amount that's, you know, north of 15 million, a lot of fans would probably be happy to see Levine go. I'm not sure if I'm at that point, but I am a little bit worried about this three-man unit going forward, and that's probably what I wanted to see most out of this season. But like I said, it's a big open question moving forward. But what I want to talk to you now is about this season itself and looking at it holistically and maybe grading the season on a scale of sorts. And I've got two questions for you, but the first one is around, I guess, judging the success of this season. Now, I guess that's it's not a universal measure, I guess. It depends on the person. But would you consider this season a success?
I would not say it's a success, but I also would not call it a failure. I think the fact that Lowry looks really good makes it not a failure. I think it would have been better if they did lose a few more games and got, I mean, I guess some of this also does kind of depend on the lottery. I guess if they still end up getting, if they get lucky in the lottery and they get a top pick to go along with Lowry, I think I could say that it is pretty close to a success. And the fact that they got another first rounder for Nico, like, I think that's a pretty good thing. So, like, while generally often cynical and pessimistic about the Bulls, like, I can't go as far as saying, like, it was definitely a success, because I think, like, we mentioned the Levine thing was disappointing, and some of these other guys, there was still a lot of ugly, there was still a lot of awful losses, which we were kind of expecting, but then it almost wasn't quite bad enough. So I guess if they end up getting lucky anyways and they end up getting that top pick they were gunning for, that I guess maybe it would turn out a lot better that they get that pick and they have a guy in Lowry that they can really rely on, or it looks like that they'll be able to really rely on. Paxton called him a foundational piece in his presser. So I guess if that happens, then I guess you could kind of call it a success. I don't know. It's still tough to call a season a success when there's so much ugly and so many bad losses, and a lot of times where they just look really completely crap-tastic on the court. So I will at least say it was not a failure, because there were some positives there to take out of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right, generally. And it almost depends on what aspect of the season you're talking about. So if you're talking about player development, I think you can consider this season a success. Like you mentioned, marketing and the fact Paxson pretty much claimed that he's a foundational piece. I think that's a fair comment from Paxson. Markkanen obviously exceeded expectations for most people. I'm not sure if anyone thought he was going to come out and average 15 points, 7 rebounds, shoot so well from the three-point line, and just look athletically like a player we didn't necessarily expect. So, you know, Markkanen just being that piece is huge for this franchise moving forward. But even the lesser guys like Valentine and Portis and even David Nwaba, like, they developed pretty well. So if you're looking at player development specifically, I think you can consider this season a success. And even Fred Hoiberg, I think he improved as a coach this season. I'm not sure about you, but the only complaints that I had about Hoiberg this season was the fact that he was actually trying to win games when I wanted him to lose games. So, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, I guess. You know, I'm assuming that management weren't or were aligned with what Hoiberg was doing, but by and large, I thought he had done a good job this season. But so when you consider the development of players and coaches, it's been a success. But I guess where we start to head towards that failure range, as you're sort of alluding to, is the whole point of the draft pick. And I don't know about you, but a top 6 to 7 pick was not what I was hoping for. But like you said, the lottery is still to be played. Maybe they can jump into that top 3 or so, or top 5, and maybe it makes how we see this season a little bit differently.
Yeah, and you mentioned Hoiberg, and Paxson, I mentioned this kind of briefly earlier, but yeah, Paxson was basically raving about Hoiberg. Obviously, he'll be back. He will not be joining the unemployment line with Jeff Hornacek and Frank Vogel. Like, they just got canned. And I think it's fair to say that Fred Schott's been improved. And obviously, one of the big factors was, as was alluded to, when they made the Jimmy trade and they dumped the other guys, is that they wanted to get a younger team, younger and more athletic. Paxson, I think, actually said that specifically again. Just to have a team that could run his system a little better, push with pace a little more, shoot more three-pointers. And obviously, they seemed a little more comfortable at times doing that. Obviously, with the personnel that they had, they still lacked the high-level talent to run it at a high level all the time. They had games where they hit a bunch of threes. I thought Chris Dunn did do a pretty nice job pushing pace. Even Cameron Payne looked a little better pushing the pace. He was obviously, the bar was very low with Cam Payne, and he also got a shout out from Paxson today. Seems like the Bulls are pretty happy with Chris Dunn and Cam Payne as their point guard duo next year. We'll see how that goes. I'm still not sold on Payne, but at least for at least positively, he looked basically, campaign looked like one of the worst players in the league last year, if not the worst. And this year, he at least looked like a competent player, like a replacement level player. Like he certainly was not good, but he was not a disaster like last year. So I guess that is a positive, that is development there. And so, yeah, with Hoiberg, seems like he did a decent job. Like I said, they praised the culture a lot, what they built. We'll see. We still have to see him coaching a team that's actually really good, is what we've seen. Teams have either been mediocre or bad, but he definitely has made strides. He doesn't seem as, he's at least learned on the job a bit. Doesn't seem as quite as inept as before. So that at least is a positive to take out of this year as well.
Yeah, most certainly. And like one of the questions I have been asking a lot of Bulls fans online is if they consider this season a success. But the other question I've been asking is, can we, I guess, consider this season, or has this season met your expectations? So they're two different questions, and I guess it more gets to the failure aspects, or maybe failure is too strong a word, but the things that maybe didn't necessarily go too well. So, and I like asking that question because it's a different way of measuring success, I guess. And again, it's not a universal measure, but to you, did this season meet your expectations?
That actually is kind of tough to say. Like, they lost a lot of games in terrible fashion, which is what I was expecting, I guess. And they won kind of around the same games, the amount of games that I thought they'd win. They lost a lot of ugly games. I guess just the fact that they did go on that winning streak, like even, like I never expected that. So I think, I guess in that, they exceeded my expectations in that matter, that they actually did look more competent at times than I figured they would. And the fact that they got a first round pick for Nico, that was a big plus to me. That exceeded my expectations. So I kind of guess so. I guess in general, they exceeded them slightly, because like I said, I figured they'd be bad. I picked them to finish last in the East, so they kind of exceeded my expectations in that regard and how good they were. So I guess they kind of exceeded them, even though they did lose a ton of games and their net rating was still like second or third worst or something like that.
Yeah. It really, again, it depends on what aspect of the season you're talking about, but to me, I still struggle, like when I think about that question myself, I struggle to get past the whole draft pick thing. And like we've already said, maybe it all solves itself if they move up in the lottery. But if we're talking about expectations, and particularly after trading Jimmy Butler, I was hopeful of a top 3 to 5 pick this season. And they were very close to getting that. And after 23 games this season, it looked like they were dead on going to get that. So for maybe a third of this season, the way it was going, they were meeting my expectations in terms of that draft pick. And this season was about developing players and how they positioned themselves from a draft perspective. And I guess from that point of view, in terms of the pick itself, obviously they've tied here with Sacramento for 6, and they've got a legitimate chance of moving up into maybe the top 5, hopefully the top 3, but maybe in the top 5. But so I guess in that sense, there's still time for this season to meet my expectations. But the way it sort of played out in the back end of the season, I was kind of disappointed. So I don't know how I feel about that question just yet still, and it's probably going to come down to the lottery, which is still a few weeks away.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It's a tough question to answer. Like you said, it's kind of depending on how you look at it. Like, they exceeded the expectations in terms of them being a little better than you thought. But then since you were expecting the high draft pick, they, by exceeding expectations, they kind of screwed your expectations as well, because you were hoping for the higher pick. It's definitely just the kind of like the conundrum of the whole tanking thing. It's like if your expectation and your hope is to get as bad a pick as possible, but then they're slightly a little better than you figured, which maybe that could end up being better in the future because your young guys are better, but then that might hurt you in terms of adding another key piece. Like it's why rebuilding is tough. Like, I mean, there's no definite easy way to do it. We see a lot of teams try to do it. Obviously the Sixers and the whole process looks great right now, and they're awesome. They're a ton of fun. But like, we also see a bunch of teams who have been awful for years. The Magic, who just fired their coach, have been a complete joke for like since Dwight Howard left. The Kings have been rebuilding in perpetuity for like 10 years. So like, rebuilding is not an easy thing. So there definitely has to be a bit of luck here. And said, hopefully they do get lucky in the lottery.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. But let's talk about these things that, you know, in terms of the expectations and the difficulty of rebuilding and all these sorts of things, let's talk about maybe what could have been done differently to either develop players more or shore up the tank, depending on what the topic is. But let's talk about what could have been done a little bit differently. And we've spoken about Mirotić in terms of his play and the fact that they obviously traded him for a first round pick, which was pretty good on paper. But in terms of that scenario or that situation itself, what could have been done differently from your perspective in terms of Mirotić himself? Do you think he should have been brought back at all? And you know, it's a pretty legitimate question. If they don't bring him back, how are they positioned right now for tanking purposes or draft pick purposes?
I honestly was fine with bringing him back because I guess I never expected him to do what he did. I guess that I have been expecting it for years. And then the year I got off the train, it was like, whatever, bringing him back is fine. He won't be that good. I guess he'll try to get his points on rebuilding team. Maybe he'll build that trade value. So I guess what kind of happened was, I guess what I kind of was hoping was going to happen once they resigned him, but he was too good. Yeah. Because just like I'd have to look at his numbers again, but he, what is it, like something like 16, 17 points a game and like 20, they didn't even play him that much. I think he played like 25, 26 minutes a game with the Bulls off the bench.
Yeah.
But his true shooting percentage was crazy, like in the mid 60s or something like that. And just, he shot like 43, 44% from three. And just like every game, like he was obviously during that winning streak, like every game, it seemed like down the stretch, he was hitting big shots in the fourth quarter or keeping the team in games when it looked like maybe things would start to get away from them. So I guess if you're looking for maybe something they could have done a little different is, I mean, maybe Hoiberg could have benched Nico down the stretch more of games. Like, I mean, it's tough to do that as a coach because you're obviously, as a coach, you get in the competitive spirit, you want to win games. And obviously at the end of the year, they completely threw that away. But like when they had that streak going and when Nico was playing well, like it's tough to bench a guy when he's doing that. But I guess if you want to look at something different, I was fine with them re-signing him. But some of those games later, maybe you just don't play Nico. Maybe you play one of the other guys or give Felicio more minutes or something like that. But I mean, Nico basically probably won them an extra three or four games.
Yeah, I think you're right there. You know, without going into the whole advanced analytics and those sorts of things and, you know, trying to calculate exactly how much he was worth from a winning perspective, he, the games he played, he was their best player by far. I think that's pretty hard to debate against. But I think it's an interesting point, like just generally thinking, you know, should they have brought him back or should they not have? Obviously, they did bring him back and he played so well to the point where they were able to get a first round pick for him. Now, given that the Pelicans played much better than I think, or at least what I was expecting after they traded for him, it kind of, I guess, limits the output or the ceiling of that pick, I guess. So maybe that trade doesn't look as good as it once did. We were hoping for the Pelicans to sort of slide out of the playoffs, but you know, that last five games, as you mentioned, Mirotić without the beard, he was awesome, and he almost screwed the Bulls draft pick on two occasions this season. But yeah, it's kind of hard. Like, do you not re-sign him and lose a good player and a guy that you can get a first round pick for? Do you let it go for nothing? Or do you bring him back and then, you know, play that risk game of him being too good and costing you wins? So I don't know what the right answer is for that particular situation. I think there's good arguments for both sides. And me being a Mirotić fan, I was happy for the Bulls to bring him back, to re-sign him and not let him go for nothing and getting a draft pick for him. But at the same time, if I have that view, I sort of have to accept as well that he was kind of responsible for three or four wins there, which, you know, could be the difference between pick one or pick two and pick five or six, which is where the Bulls currently sit now. So it's kind of hard, that situation itself. But another scenario or another thing that I think that could have been done a little bit differently as well is just the general tanking approach. And I guess it links into the whole point of bringing Mirotić back or not. But what do you think, at least from a tanking point of view, could have been done differently to maybe shore up, you know, the Bulls being in pick six at the moment or tied for pick six to maybe being in that top three?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there were a couple games that I remember where maybe you play some of your worst players more. Like, obviously, by the end of the year, as I mentioned, like, their fourth quarter lineups were basically, like, Sean Kilpatrick. And Sean Kilpatrick won them a freaking game because he scored 20 points in a fourth quarter. Like, I mean, there's really almost nothing you can do about that. There was the game in Memphis where their closing lineup was, like, Felicio, Payne, Zipser, a couple other losers. And they freaking won because Tyreke Evans fouled. Oh, Blakeney. Tyreke Evans fouled Blakeney on a three-point shot. Like, I mean, oh, those man. Are two games. That's two games right there, yeah, that are just, like, ridiculous wins. Like, they And there was like the Magic game as well that just happened. The Magic were absolutely atrocious, but they made the big comeback. The Magic were up like 5 or 6 points in the fourth quarter. The Bulls had a terrible lineup on the court in the fourth quarter, but the Magic fall apart and the Bulls scrubs win. I mean, towards the end of the year, they did try to lose games. They basically did all they could. They benched Markkanen, didn't play fourth quarters. Obviously, LaVine and Dunn were out. And there were a few games that they just won anyways. There were a couple games earlier in the year. I think like I went to the Mavericks game that they won. They had a big comeback in the fourth quarter. Portis was huge. And I mean, you could probably argue that maybe they shouldn't have played Portis that much. You could bench him, play Felicio. That game was a game where LaVine, Markkanen, and Dunn all played. And they all hit big shots down the stretch. So like, I feel like you don't want to, when you're trying to develop your young core, like your main young core guys like that, those three, like I would not have benched those guys, but like you could say, okay, bench a Bobby Portis on the stretch, play a guy like Felicio. Is Felicio had one of the worst, maybe the worst net rating in the league. I think it was like minus 18 among like rotation players. So like maybe they could have done a better job about certain fourth quarter lineups. We saw a lot of the other bad teams would play some really terrible lineups and they would lose games, but and like I said, on the flip side, there were also games where the Bulls did try to lose and they still ended up winning them. And I mean, there's something when those games happen like that, you really can just kind of throw your hands up in the air and laugh a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if they're going to win some games, then you obviously can't manufacture a scenario where they lose every single game. You know, one night there might be a team that's off for whatever reason. And on that same night, the Bulls just happen to get hot, make a whole bunch of threes, make
hit. Like the Wizards game. The Wizards game was
exactly
like that.
Like,
Bulls beat them by like 20. They hit like 18 threes. The Wizards run a second of a back-to-back. That's a game you can accept winning because those games happen.
Yeah, exactly. And it's against a decent team at least. So
yeah.
It's not necessarily going to hurt the tank from, you know, it will to a degree because you're obviously winning a game, but you're not necessarily winning against another bad team who you're giving a loss to. So from that perspective, it's like, okay, I can accept this one random win, but I don't know. There was games earlier in, well, not earlier in the season, but maybe 20 games ago. The game against the Mavericks, the game against the Hawks. To me, it sort of felt like the Bulls waited a little bit too long to get down to that level where other teams were already, you know, throwing out these bad lineups to where they were actually doing analytics to find their worst possible combinations, five-man units that they could play at the death of games to make sure that they lose. But the Bulls were still sort of running Markkanen and Dunn, LaVine, maybe Felicio and I don't know whoever else was at small forward, a Valentine or a Nwaba type player.
Yeah.
So those sorts of scenarios, I was like, well, why can't you pull those guys out earlier instead of playing Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen, you know, 34 minutes, maybe play them 28. And I don't know, maybe that impacts the loss or impacts the results. But, you know, another thing is why sign Sean Kilpatrick? Like, he was going to go to the Boston Celtics and the Bulls sort of swooped in there and brought in Sean Kilpatrick, who won them the game against the Charlotte Hornets. Like, why did that have to happen? I don't get that.
So that really made no sense. I mean, Kilpatrick's, what, journeyman, 28, 29. Like, obviously the guy's playing for his life. But like you said, he had a job lined up somewhere else. Like, I don't know. Did the Bulls pay him more money? Is that what happened? Is that why he signed with the Bulls, right? Like, were they just doing him a favor? Were they doing an agent a favor to give him a little more money? Like, because it really does make no sense. Like, and if you're going to use that spot on somebody, why not use it on a younger guy that you can bring in? And maybe he will be a part of next year. I mean, I guess maybe Kilpatrick could be back next year, but like, it still doesn't make, he's still going to be like a 29, 30 year old journeyman guy. And he's really not a good player. He had a few great games, just like for whatever reason. I guess he had a few games like that early in his career when the guy can score a bit, but he's inconsistent. And like the last couple of years, his numbers were absolutely atrocious. And then here he comes off the street and puts up 20-point quarters and wins the Bulls a game. So it's like, why did this happen?
Yeah, exactly. And to me, the way I sort of thought of this, the Kilpatrick situation was he was the right player at the wrong time. And what I mean by that is obviously not a great player or even maybe even a good player, but he's obviously a guy that can come off your bench and contribute. And that's what he did for the Bulls. He averaged 15.5 points, shot 40% from the three-point line. So those, you know, from a guy that you're coming off the bench that you want to score points, that he did exactly that. So he was the right player for them, but at the worst absolute, or the, you know, the complete wrong time. You don't want a guy coming off your bench who can help you score points. The whole objective of the last 10 games was to score as little as points as you possibly could. So I don't know, that whole situation didn't make a lot of sense to me. But even maybe going back to February, Justin Holiday, for whatever reason, was averaging 35 minutes a game in February for the Bulls. Like, why is that happening? They obviously had to go to, you know, some pretty extreme lengths where they were pretty much benching him and Lopez towards the back end of the season, you know, resting them for the younger guys. But instead of playing Holiday 35 minutes a game in February, you know, how do certain results sort of weigh up against, you know, the total season itself if instead of playing Holiday 35 minutes, you're playing him 28 or something like that? Like, I don't know. And
there was a stretch, it might have been in February, there was a stretch there where Holiday, I think it might have been right before the All-Star break, so that would make sense, January, February, and that was, I think, around the time where the Bulls were looking a little better, where Holiday was playing really well. Like, he was hitting a ton of threes, shooting, and just on fire. I think he definitely probably contributed to a few wins with some of that hot shooting. So that definitely is a decent point as well with him. And you mentioned though, we haven't really talked about that though, the whole thing with Holiday and Lopez and how they went from being starters to then just being completely mothballed. And then the Bulls got warned by the league, which is kind of hilarious because obviously I honestly didn't have a problem with the league doing that because like to have two guys that have been starting all year, your team, they talked about these are important guys to our team or key veterans for us. To go from basically playing 30 minutes a game to literally just not dressing and not playing, I thought was pretty absurd. I think the Bulls easily could have skirted those tanking rules. After the warning, they did it right. They basically kind of alternated benching. They one would play, the other wouldn't play, and they'd kind of flip that up until the end of the year. Lopez just didn't play at all, and Holiday played the rest of the year. But that was still kind of another hilarious aspect of the season was the fact that the Bulls got warned for breaking the rest rules.
Yeah, and I guess what makes that even more confounding to me is the fact that they didn't trade them. And I understand that Paxson mentioned the fact that, you know, in order to trade them, other teams wanted to send bad contracts back to Chicago. And I could sort of buy that argument for someone like Robin Lopez, who still has a year left on his deal and, you know, around $14 million or so. But Justin Holiday in January, he was averaging 35 minutes for the Bulls, shooting over 40% from the three-point line. He's only making $5 million next season and is an expiring deal, so it's not too huge. I kind of don't buy the argument that no team would have taken back Justin Holiday without sending money back. A ton of teams could have used him. A heap of teams. A lot of these playoff teams at the moment.
Timberwolves, the Warriors could use him. Like, there are tons. Exactly. Any team can use a 3 and D-ish. I mean, he's not the greatest ND, but when he tries, he's not bad. And then guy that shoots high 30s, 40% from 3, like, obviously Holiday is a limited player. We saw when he would try to shoot a lot of shots, especially the beginning of the year when he was really chucking. That's not the role. But when he plays a more limited role and he's just concentrating on shooting spot-up threes, he's a really good player. They absolutely could have gotten probably a second-rounder for him at least. Obviously, I doubt they would have gotten a first-rounder, but, I mean, I would take a second-round pick for Justin Holiday because, I mean, maybe he's back next year. Like, but in terms of, like, when the Bulls are actually good again, like, I don't think he'll be around unless they do keep him around for the long term. Maybe he's still not that old. What is he, like, is he 29, 30, something like that?
Yeah, I think he's 28.
But so they absolutely could have gotten a second-round pick for him. It was like there was a ton of teams could have used him, and it was kind of I wasn't surprised that Lopez stayed because like you said, the contract's a little bigger, a little tougher to unload without maybe taking some bad money back. But Holiday, easy deal to get rid of, and a lot of teams could have used him. That was kind of weird they didn't end up trading him.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, these little things. Maybe if they execute these things a little bit differently, maybe instead of 27 wins, maybe they have 25. And if that's the case, maybe the Bulls are, you know, fourth or fifth at the moment rather than sixth or tied for sixth. So, but I guess they're unknowns. We can't necessarily say for certain that that's the way things would have been. But I guess just looking at it from my perspective, those are the sort of things that I wish maybe could have been done a little bit differently or maybe explored a little bit harder. Rather than, I won't say half-assing it, because I think the Bulls definitely did try pretty hard towards the end of the season to tank hard, but I just kind of wonder maybe in January or February, if they had sort of been a little bit more proactive about it then, you know, how maybe things might be in a little bit differently, but alas, it is what it is, and we're hoping for lottery luck at the moment, but look, we've talked about this season pretty much in depth, I think. I don't really want to talk too much more about this season. I'm starting the process of erasing it from my mind, but let's project forward now and start to thinking about the draft and free agency and what this team hopefully will be heading into 2018-19. So let's talk Chris Dunn first. We mentioned before that he's going to be a 25-year-old point guard coming into his third season. Paxson today obviously mentioned that, you know, Dunn really needs to work on his finishing inside and the fact that he will be the starting point guard going forward. What do you see from Dunn next season, and do you think it's a lock that he will be the starting point guard at the end of next season?
I would guess he will be the starting point guard at the end of next season. I will not say it's a lock that he is for the, will that be 2019-20 season. I'm still kind of skeptical about Chris Dunn. I will establish right now that my expectations for him were just basically in the bottom of the barrel. Because when I watched him with the Timberwolves his rookie season, he was absolutely atrocious. Not impressed at all. He showed some nice things defensively, but as an offensive player, he just a completely lost and not a good shooter, just not aggressive. It was really bad. So the fact that he did show legitimate improvement, he was the closer in a couple games, hit some big shots, and the fact that he appears to be a competent point guard, solid defensive potential, he's a defensive playmaker. The fact that he looks like an NBA player. In fact, he's going to have to take, you mentioned the finishing thing, he was a bad finisher on the rim, which is disappointing considering he get there a lot. He also doesn't draw fouls very well for someone who can get to the rim a lot, so that's something he's got to get better at. His shooting improved, but it still is super inconsistent. His jump shot just really looks super awkward to me and not great. But so like, there's still so much that he can work on for him to be, I think, the quote-unquote point guard of the future. So while it isn't, Paxson said, encouraging, I would agree that this year was encouraging for Chris Dunn, but there's still a ton of work for him to do for me to be, okay, this guy is the guy that is going to be the legitimate point guard of the future. He can be a consistent player, because I talk about, mentioned consistency. Like, there were so many games this year where he would have like a great game where he'd shoot like 7 of 11 or 7 of 12 from the field and have 7 or 8 assists. And then the next game he'd go like 2 of 13. Like, he would have the swings in his good play to his just awful play where it's so huge, where, I mean, you can't have a point guard that's doing that all the time. So he needs to get a lot more consistent. I mentioned the shooting, finishing, getting better, drawing fouls. There's still a ton. And also his turnovers. Like, he sometimes with his handle, can be so sloppy where he'll just be driving in the lane and he'll just completely lose the ball, stuff like that. So there's still a lot of room for improvement there. And the fact that he is going to be 25 next year, obviously, it counts against him, because you wonder, like, has he hit his ceiling? Like, how much higher will his ceiling go? So it'll be interesting to see how high he can get in the next year or two.
Yeah, definitely. And look, maybe I'll frame it this way. I really like Chris Dunn. I like the player he is at the moment and who he can be. I don't think he's going to be a high-level talent, but I think he can still be a competent and effective and even a productive NBA player. But my main concern with Chris Dunn is maybe not even Dunn himself, but maybe the franchise's view of Chris Dunn. And what I'm alluding to is the fact that his presence on the roster may influence how the Bulls go into the draft coming up. And I'm wondering what their approach will be at the draft, because if the Bulls do pick at 6 or 7, within that range, and Paxson alluded to it today, that, you know, they're looking for an athletic wing who can sort of defend and shoot threes. And that makes complete sense. I understand why they would be looking for that player, given that there is a gaping hole at small forward on this team. But to me, what I also read into that is the fact that the team isn't necessarily looking at any guards. And given that the Bulls may end up at 7, someone like Trae Young will be sitting there for the Bulls as well. And obviously, the hype around Young was pretty huge. It sort of simmered down towards the back end of his college season there. But I would be kind of disappointed if the Bulls just completely overlook a point guard like Young because of Dunn's presence. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't, the Trae Young thing, I honestly don't know. It's like, I feel like there's a big value, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but high risk, high reward, I guess, type player with Trae Young, because like, especially with the Bulls, like the idea of him like turning into like, I'm not gonna say Steph Curry, obviously that was a big thing, calling him the next Steph Curry, even a Steph Curry light, like in Fred's system with the offense and shooting threes, like the idea of him in that offense sounds great. I'm also very worried just about Bulls' long-term future in terms if they are building like a backcourt that has Trae Young and Zach LaVine in it, and Lowry, while Lowry's not an awful defender, he's still not very good. I'm still kind of worried about how they do build a good defense. So if they drafted a guy like Trae Young, I'm honestly not totally sure. Like, if the Bulls get whatever the seventh pick and he's there and they drafted him, I wouldn't be upset or anything, because the fact that the potential that is there could be a lot of fun. I just would have my questions about how they would build, I guess, an elite, or not even elite, but just like a decent defense around that group, especially with like Levine coming back. In terms of, I guess, Paxson did kind of say after he mentioned the wing thing that while they would like a wing, that they can't overlook talent. So hopefully if they have a guy that they like, that they think is the best player available there, that they don't draft for the specific need, and that if there's a guy that they really love Trae Young, whatever, screw Chris Dunn. I guess Trae Young is a guy who could come off the bench next year and be your sixth man microwave type, and then maybe one of them separates themselves over the next couple of years, and then they turn the point guard of the future. They definitely should not. The Bulls are not at a point where they can be they can pass over a talent if they think that guy's better than everybody else.
Yeah, I'm certainly in agreement there, and so. You know, I'm not necessarily convinced Trae Young is the guy I want the Bulls to draft, but at the same time, I don't want the Bulls to be avoiding certain players in the draft
because
you know, the existence of Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine or maybe even Lauri Markkanen. You know, obviously, you know, Paxson mentioned Lauri is a foundational piece, but I wouldn't necessarily say that's set in stone, but I'm more confident about Lauri than Dunn, for example. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just kind of worried based on, you know, Dunn has been locked into that starting point guard role, and the fact that even though Paxson alluded to potentially drafting the highest talent available, I am a little bit scared that they might go for fit here. And I guess it builds into my next question, which is around the whole free agency period, which will obviously happen after July 1. And Paxson did allude to today that they won't necessarily be chasing any veterans or experienced guys, a ton of those sorts of things, or trying to rebuild or retool this roster through free agency, but I kind of am not convinced about that, given that they'll have so much room in free agency to do something. Do you buy what he said about that? Do you think that they will sort of go into free agency pretty cool and not necessarily reach on too much, or do you think they'll do a typical Bulls thing where, you know, every 3 to 4 years they do use that free agency period to really re-up that roster?
I'm not that worried about them going out and making like a really stupid like veteran sign. I mean, obviously, like in terms of like the best guys, like obviously the best free agents aren't coming to the Bulls. Like, I do wonder if maybe they'll go after somebody in restricted free agency. Like, I'd hope they do not go after Jabari Parker. I think that'd be silly. I don't think that would make much sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you're looking at other restricted free agents, like Aaron Gordon could be interesting. Clint Capella, I would assume the Rockets are going to keep him no matter what. I can't remember what other restricted free agents are out there, but I'm not too worried about them doing something incredibly stupid. If they are going to use any of their cap space, it should be, I think, for a younger restricted free agent like that. Maybe take a run at a guy if they, whatever, the contract is matched, whatever, it doesn't really hurt anything. And if they can't get anything there, that they can maybe just sign maybe a few cheap veterans. And they could always use the cap space to take on another contract and get another asset. And I know they talked about they don't want to really take on any more bad money since they have the Ashik deal already on the books. But that Ashik contract is going to be up, I think, pretty soon. That last year of his deals, I think only $3 million guaranteed. So they should be willing, if they're not going to use it to sign players, they should be using the will to take on a contract to get more assets, because they're still in the building phase, and getting more assets in that building phase is a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And as you alluded to, I'm not necessarily expecting them to make a splash, but at the same time, I would be very surprised if they don't sign like a Justin Holiday equivalent or a Robin Lopez equivalent, where you bring in one or two veterans who can help, you know, the whole culture piece, which is obviously very important to management at the moment.
Somebody that I saw, I think it was Mort Jensen, tweeted about, I think he wants the Bulls to go after Mario Hezonja, which would be kind of interesting. He's obviously, Orlando's kind of just like a life sucker for any talent. We've seen, I mean, we saw Victor Oladipo is obviously broken out in Indiana after a few just okay years there in OKC. Hezonja started to look all right. I think he's pretty sure he's like a terrible defender, but he's still super young. Maybe if they, and I think they declined his option. I mean, maybe if you take a flyer on somebody like that on a short-term deal, it could be kind of interesting. I would definitely, I would assume they will look to sign another, at least one or two other veteran types, but I kind of do hope they take a chance, if they can take a chance on a maybe a disappointing younger player to maybe he just needs a change of scenery, something like that. I think that'd be a decent.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. I'm definitely all over those second draft type players where they didn't necessarily make it with their first team, but you can sort of get in there and swoop up and maybe, you know, like a bit of a culture change can make that player effective. But I don't know if Hezonja is my guy, yeah. Particularly with
Levine. I don't know either.
I mean, that particular wing rotation would be, you know, full of headaches for me at least. But I like the idea. But look, it's an interesting. I do wonder what they're going to do with their free agency dollars. And another thing that maybe sways me against the thinking of maybe they do sign guys is the fact that the roster, a lot of these guys are on guaranteed deals and there's not a lot of roster spaces at the moment. So they would really need to get rid of guys like Jerian Grant, Paul Zipser, you know, these types of players, Noah Vonleh, who are at the end of the bench to make room for a free agent or two to come in. So I'm kind of hopeful that they do what you exactly suggested, which is taking on a bad contract and getting another pick for next season. So that's what I'm hopeful of them doing. But we shall see what Paxson and the team do going forward. But I guess another question that I have here for you is, let's assume that the Bulls stay where they are in the draft. You know, let's just call it 7. Maybe the Kings get in front of them. Do you think 2 back-to-back number 7 picks is enough to really remodel this franchise? Obviously, it depends on the player coming back that you do select in the draft. But again, thinking about expectations and blowing up the team, 2 number 7 picks are effectively going to be the 2 prized possessions that the Bulls have in this rebuild. Do you think that's enough to really set this course or this team on a course for getting back to contention anytime soon?
That really is tough to say, just because, I mean, obviously the draft is a crapshoot. Obviously, you want to have higher picks. You have the better chance of getting a superstar, but you can get stars from almost anywhere if you get lucky. Lowry does look a lot better than expected. I guess it could depend on just who they take. Because like we mentioned, the way the Packs, we mentioned this earlier, how they want a wing who can shoot and can defend. And basically, when he was saying that, it was like the mind obviously naturally just went to Mikal Bridges from Villanova, but Mikal Bridges from Villanova, from what I watched a decent amount of Nova this year, especially as they went on in the tournament, obviously they won it all. He had a really, really solid year, took a big, nice big leap. He's a really good shooter. He's long. He can defend. But you also worry about what kind of ceiling that kind of player has. Like, he would feel like a very ballsy pick as a guy who was in college for, whatever, 3-4 years, a guy who just can do a lot of things really well and would be a safe pick and who could really help any team. But you do wonder, like, is that the kind of guy that's going to elevate you as you're moving forward? I don't really know about that, because he from what I also saw, he just doesn't dribble very well. He doesn't really create his own shot very well. He's a guy that would play off well off of others, which maybe that would be a good fit next to whatever, if Dunn and Levine take a big next step and they get a lot better and one of those guys can be a legitimate whatever 1A, 2 option, whatever, and Lowry develops into a true 1. But that would have basically a lot going right. So there's definitely a lot of question marks there. So if you don't go a guy like Mikal Bridges, like, do you go for a guy maybe with more upside like Michael Porter Jr.? I know, I feel like I see a lot of Bulls fans on Twitter love Michael Porter Jr. They would really like draft him. I think he was at the Bulls game the other night wearing Bulls stuff. And like, but he also has the whole back thing. He barely played this year. I don't know if he's better as a 3, as a 4. I don't know, like, if you add another unproven young ball dominant player, how does that mess with Levine? How does it mess with Dunn? How does it mess with Lowry? You have to wonder how all that would fit together. So it's definitely not as ideal that if the Bulls end up at 7 and they might end up getting a guy who's just who's a nice player, who's good, but maybe not a superstar type talent. So, I mean, so much of this just almost just kind of comes down to luck. Like, we can talk about this all we want, but they almost just kind of have to get lucky.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right. You know, maybe a player falls down to 7 and that player turns out to be like Lauri Markkanen and, again, exceeds expectations like Markkanen did. That's what I'm hoping for. But, I mean, they do need to get lucky in that sense because they're not getting a top 3 pick. And even if you have a top 3 pick, you still need luck on your side.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
You know, you're definitely right. But I am still a little bit skeptical about, you know, coming away from, obviously, last season training Jimmy and then now heading into this draft, the two number seven picks, typically on you know, based on history at least, you know, they're not high level picks. You know, you have the ability to get good players from number seven, and Lowry certainly looks like he's going to be a very good player. So maybe that happens again, but I don't know. I'm not necessarily confident about it, but maybe that's just generally my pessimistic approach with all things Bulls. But who knows? Maybe they get lucky. But the last question that I wanted to ask you about this season, and maybe, you know, heading in towards next season, is which players do you actually feel good about on this roster right now, heading in towards next season? Well, we can ignore Lowry marketing because I'm sure you're obviously going to be pretty glowing about Lowry, as pretty much every single Bulls fan is. So maybe let's just ignore the obvious there and focus on the remainder of the roster, guys like LaVine, Dunn, Valentine, Portis, etc. Which of those guys do you really feel good about moving forward on the roster beyond this offseason?
I can't say I really feel great about any of them. Like, I like some aspects of them. Like, we've talked about LaVine a lot, and I think he'll be better next year, assuming he is back. His second year off the ACL and getting more comfortable again. Like, before he tore his ACL, he was having a nice year in Minnesota. Defense was still a problem, but in terms of an efficient offensive player, we started to see that a bit more in his third season. Hopefully he gets back to that. I think a lot of people have kind of way too big expectations for him, like, including some people in the media are hyping up LaVine as, oh, he can be like a James Harden light. Like, please slow your roll. Just stop yourself. Like,
yeah.
But so, like, in terms of other guys, like, Portis is an interesting character, but he legitimately did have a good year, but I just don't really like him. So, like, I feel like that just colors my view of him. Like, I think Portis is a nice guy to have off your bench as like a sixth man, but there's also he'll be eligible for an extension this summer. I hope the Bulls don't give him one and they just give him another year, see how he develops further next year. Because I think what I think is he's looking like he tops out as like a sixth man score type off the bench, because he's still not a good defender. He's still kind of goofy, like, he's kind of a bum slayer. So, like, he just seems like the perfect guy who plays 20, 25 minutes off the bench and can score a lot and give you energy, which is a valuable player to have. But, like, I don't know if we'll see. Like, I don't want to pay that a lot of money. Like, if the Bulls were, like, if he was, like, the missing piece, like, off the bench and the Bulls needed, like, yeah, that'd be great. But, like, with the team still not that close to contending, in my opinion, I don't know what will happen with him. But I'm fine keeping him around next year. I think he's a solid bench guy. Denzel Valentine did legitimately improve. I know we have talked about Valentine a lot. I like to chide Valentine a bit, because I think his self-awareness is comically low, because he thinks he's incredibly good when he's not. He thinks he should be a starter next year. I completely disagree. He's another guy. I think the Bulls, I guess, just in the same vein of Portis, I think the Bulls have the makings of a pretty nice bench just moving forward with between Valentine. I hope they bring David Nwaba back. He's solid wing defender, brings a ton of energy. He even improved his 3-point shot a bit next year, even though the volume wasn't very high. I think those three guys make, and if Payne is okay, like, as a point guard, like, I think that's a decent bench there. Felicio is obviously a huge disappointment. Maybe he'll find it again next year. He did start showing a little more at the end of the year. Maybe that'll carry over. You have the makings of a decent bench there. So, like, I guess some of those guys I feel a little bit better about. But it all comes back to the big question is, do they have the guys that will become legit studs? And I just don't know about that outside of Lowry. I'm still skeptical on LaVine and Dunham in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. And look, we talked about lottery luck and hopefully getting lucky in the draft. But at the same time, I think the Bulls need a bit of luck in terms of, you know, a LaVine or a Dunn or maybe even someone that they draft this season turning into a really key piece, because I don't think Lowry's as good as he could be. I don't think he's going to be enough by himself. So
yeah, I agree.
We'll see what happens towards this offseason now. We've got plenty of time to think about it. Obviously, the playoffs is starting for, you know, 14 other teams are sort of dwindling now, thinking about the draft, and obviously the Bulls are one of them. So we've got several months here to talk about the draft, and I'll obviously have a few podcasts doing that. But Jay, between that time, I appreciate you coming on, mate, and helping me digest this interesting season. I'll call it that. But thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure talking Bulls, even when the season is mostly a complete pile of crap.
It was a pile of crap, definitely, in some aspects. And hopefully the draft, or at least the lottery on May 15, makes this season a little bit better. But yeah, thanks again, mate.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that pretty much brings us towards the end of this episode. like I said, it was a tough season to really, I guess, as fans, put ourselves through. But hopefully the reward will be worth it. Hopefully the Bulls find themselves a nice player in this draft and can add to Lauri Markkanen and really build towards, I guess, rebuilding a really nice contender here. That's the goal. Hopefully they can do that, but we shall see. And as we move closer towards the draft, I probably will be putting out a couple episodes around the draft itself. You know, who, you know, player profiles, who the Bulls should be drafting, who should they be thinking about with their pick, but also the Pelicans pick, these sorts of things. So I'll probably do a podcast around the lottery and how that shakes out, as well as what players the Bulls should be heading or thinking about heading into the draft closer towards June. So be on the lookout for that. I probably won't be doing a weekly podcast given that there is pretty much still 2 months between the draft and now, but every 2 to 3 weeks or so, I'll hit you guys up with a new show. But yeah, at the moment, there's not a ton to talk about, unfortunately, but I will be coming back to you guys with some draft stuff over the next few weeks. But, you know, thinking about this season holistically, I think it was my first season as well from a Bulls HQ perspective. I think I started it towards the back end of last season, but this was my first full season as a Bulls podcast, or Bulls HQ was at least. So, look, I appreciate everyone for listening in throughout the season, following the podcast, sharing it with people, you know, commenting on it, liking it, these sorts of things. I really do appreciate it all. It's very humbling when people do, I guess, listen to it. And, it's still strange to me that people do that, given the fact that I'm just some random dude online that, I guess, has the audacity to actually get online and talk about the Bulls. And it's nice knowing that there's people out there not only appreciating it, but at the same time, listening to it and conversing with me online about the Bulls, the beloved Bulls, as my friend CBE Fred would say. So, look, I appreciate everyone for downloading the show, listening to it, and hopefully you've enjoyed this season and heading towards the draft. Hopefully you enjoy the shows that are to come. But like I said, appreciate everyone's support, and I'll be back in a few weeks' time with some draft pods, which hopefully should be a little bit more exciting than the regular season stuff. So until then, thank you for listening, and I'll catch you all next time.